Welcome back to another episode of the Jewish Moves Podcast. This week's episode is with Lenny Solomon. He's the creator and lead singer of Schlock Rock, a band with 42 albums and over 520 songs that are parody, original, or specifically for children. Schlock Rock is also the only Jewish music group to have performed in all 50 U.S. states. Lenny, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great. It's great to be here.
Thank you for agreeing to come on. I guess we'll start from the beginning, which is, when did you start playing and writing music?
First thing is, I started taking music lessons when I was 8 years old. My father, Oliver Shalom, took me for accordion lessons back in 1969. Everybody played accordion. All my friends, we all took accordion lessons. And so I took for 10 years from 8 to 18. And then when I was 15, I started taking piano lessons at the same time. So I took piano lessons from 15 to 18, accordion lessons from 8 to 18. And then when I went into college, I took music courses. And then when did I start playing with a band? Around 19, 20 years old, I started playing with a band. My first band was called the Shemesh Orchestra. The band leader was Zalman Umlis, and Avi Feinberg was the drummer. And we used to play. We played weddings and bar mitzvahs. And then a couple of years later, I met Tzvi Pill. Tzvi Pill and I were in Camp Dor Goldin together, and we formed a band called Kesher, which had Joey Friedman and Shlomo Horowitz in the first incarnation. And then Yona Lloyd replaced Shlomo Horowitz, and Jonathan Rimberg eventually replaced Jonathan Rimberg. Jonathan Rimberg eventually replaced Joey Friedman when he moved to Memphis. So that was my first time I put out albums. 84 was the first time I put out albums. And I'm going to say 1981, I started playing with bands. And I knew nothing. I knew absolutely nothing. You know, you don't know the business until you're in the business. And it was a great learning experience. So when I played a lot of NCSY Shabbatones back in starting from 81 to 88, I used to do lots of Shabbatones a year, maybe 50, 60 Shabbatones a year.
Wow.
Couldn't be 50. Would have to be like 30 because they're Shabbases. So that's like 30 to 35 Shabbatones a year all over the country. I started off in New York region, then I went to Virginia region, then I went to Seaboard region, which was Baltimore, Washington, Philadelphia. Then I went to, I did Canada, Toronto, Montreal. I did St. Louis and Midwest region, which was St. Louis and Omaha. You know, I got to see America and I got to see American Jews. And even at this point, I was not really, I became a full-time musician in 1985. I left accounting. Accounting was my degree, believe it or not, in Queens College. And then I left accounting in 85 and started playing, you know, I went full-time music from 85 until now, which is what I do.
Wow, it's a lot of performing, especially in the early years. You mentioned you took music lessons when you were 8 years old, and I think your father wanted you to have a career in music, but as you mentioned, you majored in finance without the intention of pursuing music. What caused the switch that brought you away from accounting?
Okay, good. So I actually never thought about what I was going to do for a living. So it wasn't that I wasn't going to do music. It was that my father, he said to me, he wanted me to go to Juilliard and get my master's in music and become a full-time musician. And I said, but Dad, how am I going to make a living? So it wasn't that I didn't want to do music. Who does music for a living? How many parents tell their kids to do music for a living? I think my dad was the only one. So anyway, but he had this idea that I was good at this and this is what I was going to do. Now, what ended up happening was I worked as an accountant from 82 to 85, but already in 1982, 83, I knew this was not it. That I wasn't going to let. Now, it wasn't that I didn't like numbers. I love numbers and I love accounting. I just, it just wasn't what I wanted to do for my life. You know, I look down the road. Do I want to do this till I'm 65 years old? No, big time no. So I spoke to my boss and I stayed there 3 years, but I worked 4 days a week and I did music on weekends. Now, when did I know that music would be a full-time living? In 88, when Schlock Rock was doing 100 gigs a year.
That's amazing.
100 concerts a year around the world from 88 to 1996. But that from 86, when I put out the first Schlock Rock album, now what happened was is that I was with Tzvi Pill on the band Kesher, but Tzvi wanted to be more of a wedding bar mitzvah player. I wanted to be more of a concert performer. Like I loved Billy Joel. I loved the music of the 70s and 80s. And so I, you know, we weren't on the same page, and I ended up leaving Kesher after album right after album three. I left Kesher and I started Schlock Rock. Now Schlock Rock, all of a sudden in 88, the phone is ringing off the hook for Schlock Rock. This is crazy. All HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God does everything. And it took me until the Corona thing to really learn how much God does, because, you know, you always think, oh, I'm really good at this, that's why I'm making a living, right? But it's not true. God is giving you parnasa in whichever way he sees fit. Now, a lot of times that can be in law, it could be in medicine, it could be in accounting, or it could be in music. But it's not normal. I don't want to say the word normal, but it's not regular for it to be in music. And for me, it was as soon as I put out that first Schlock Rock album, you know, 3 months later, people are writing to me, this is the greatest thing ever. And my non-religious brother is listening to your album around the clock and he hates Judaism. Keep up the good work. And, you know, and then I put out a second one, and then I put out Jewish Pride, and I put out Emunah. To original albums, because I love writing original music. There are different compartments of musical composition in my life. You have the original music in Hebrew, the original music in English. You have the parodies, which are when I take the non-Jewish songs and I change the words, like Under the Chuppah and Old Time Rock and Roll, Old Time Torah Scroll, My Menorah, We've Got a Strong Desire, Rashi, you know, and then you have the kids' music that I did when I got married and I had kids. So I made a kids' album for each one of my four daughters, Bulia and Hara. And then,
wow.
And then I wrote musicals. I've written three musicals. So that's a much harder thing to do. And also it's a much harder thing to get heard. So for instance, I've written three musicals. The third one is called Daniel in Babylon, and it's on the Sefer Daniel. And right now I'm in the process of trying to get it produced. It's taken me 10 years. I wrote it 10 years ago. So that's been a very frustrating experience, because with the Schlock Rock, Hashem spoiled me. You know, like I put out a Schlock Rock album and boom, people are like, you know, yes, we want this, we want this, we want this. And, and they're saying, well, can you come to Savannah, Georgia? Can you come to Melbourne, Australia? Can you go to South Africa? I've been everywhere. Not only have I played in all 50 U.S. states, I've played in pretty much every single Canadian city except for Winnipeg. And I've played in England, so many cities in England and Australia and South Africa and Mexico, been in Mexico. So I've seen the Jewish community like very few people have seen, like Avram Fried, like Yerachmiel Begun, like, you know, he's gone to all these places, I think. I've spent a lot of time in each one of these places. So like in Melbourne, when I would go to Melbourne, they were always for Kiruv seminars called Counterpoint. And when I went to Johannesburg, they were again for Kiruv seminars called Encounter. So they, you know, you really, really meet the Jewish community there and you develop a lot of friends. So I've got friends all over the world that's
nice.
Fantastic.
Yes, I guess you mentioned playing all over the world. How does performing in states with the large Jewish communities like New York, New Jersey, and Florida compare to the performances in states where places that most people never go to?
Good. So when I played Fargo, North Dakota, 7 people came.
Whoa.
Bozeman, Montana, 8 people came. Laramie, Wyoming, 33 people. Boise, Idaho, 90 people. Now, first thing is, your show is going to be different. Your show has to be different because they don't know Torah in those places like they know Torah in New York, New Jersey. Also, New York, New Jersey, they've grown up with me. Baltimore and Philadelphia, L.A., Florida, Chicago, they've grown up me. Everybody... If you meet somebody and they've never heard of Schlock Rock, it's pretty unusual. Either they've been in a Haredi world, or yeshivish world their entire lives, or they've been in a non-Jewish world their entire lives, right? But if you're modern Orthodox to conservative, you even yeshivish a little, but you've come across Shlachrach, Achashverosh, Achashverosh. Everybody knows Achashverosh. They play it on Purim and Lakewood. So, so there it's a different audience. You have to cater each show to your audience. So, like if you're like last tour that I just did, I came back. I had a different experience. I played a senior citizens home. We never did that before.
Interesting.
So when you're playing senior citizens, what do you think your show is going to be? It's going to be Beatles. It'll be Broadway. So Schlockrock Beatles, Schlockrock Broadway. Then you have the music of the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. And the people loved it. And they said, come back next year. We want you next year.
That's really nice.
You know, every single audience you cater, you play to a different crowd, you know.
Yeah, makes sense.
So that brings you to a very interesting question. Like, what happens when you play to a Reform community and you play every bite you take? You're talking about kosher food, but you know they don't keep kosher, right? So the way you do it is you kind of play the song, but you play the song in more of a comedy way. But it'll get into them, hopefully, and they'll say, you know what, maybe I'll eat kosher, maybe I'll keep kosher. You know, you never know. It's a great play. It's always great to play the Reform and the Conservative, because you're teaching much more than you're teaching in the Orthodox world. You know, you're teaching different things.
That's interesting. And we already started discussing about how today you're one of the most recognizable names with some of the most iconic songs and have seemingly performed everywhere. But before we continue discussing that, do you have a most treasured memory from the early days, whether with the Shemesh Orchestra, the band called Kesher, where you wrote 13 of 28 released songs, or something else that you did?
Okay, so that's a good question.
Thank you.
So with the Shemesh Orchestra, I don't really have memories that are like top 10 memories, but they were good. Everybody needs to be in the Shemesh Orchestra because you got to learn. You got to learn how to play. You got to learn how to play a gig. And then you hook yourself up with band leaders that know what they're doing, and they teach you, right? I remember that when I started playing gigs on my own, I did a couple of gigs with an Neshama Orchestra, and Eli Kahn was the band leader. He's just a fabulous band leader. You sit there and you learn so much, and you see how he constructs his set, how people are dancing, and then they're getting higher and higher and higher and higher and higher, and he's doing it. He's doing it based on song selection. Right. And those guys, he taught me a lot, but I knew I wasn't going to be a club date player. I didn't want to be a bar mitzvah wedding player. Now, we did do bar mitzvahs and weddings with Schlockrock, but that's called specialty. That's what people call you up and say, we need you to be at this simcha. Now, let me give you a couple of great memories. The first time I played V'samachta Bechagecha from Kesher 1. V'samachta Bechagecha.
Schlucky put that on his holiday mix, right?
Schwecki did, yeah. That's very interesting, right?
Yeah.
So that song is like number two behind the other V'samachta, V'samachta, V'chagecha. Then you have my V'samachta. That was the first song I ever wrote in Hebrew. I really was the only hit that I had in that world. After that, I've written over 150 songs. Close, I guess. I have Ani Yehudi, I have Am Yisrael Chai, I have Hinei Matov, but then they don't do what V'samachta did. And the first time I played it, I knew. First time I played it, I knew it was going to be a hit, because I watched people sing it as if they had been singing the song their entire life. Now, once we get to Schlockrock, there are so many different great memories, so many memories. First thing is the original members of the band: Gary Wallen on drums, Mark Skyer on bass, Mark Infield on percussion, Yona Lloyd on guitar, Danny Block on sax, and myself on keyboard. And we had so many fun times together, whether we were all six or whether we were just four of us, because it was a lower budget show, because people can't afford to, who can fly six people out from New York to Seattle? So like when we played Seattle, Vancouver, you know, those areas, we played four-piece band instead of a six-piece band. No, it didn't matter. I mean, it would have been great to have everybody, but you know, when I went to Israel, we filmed the first video compilation. We have this video compilation called Schlock Rock Videos Volume 1, and I took the whole band to Israel, and we went around the country, and Phil Schiller was the video videographer, and J.J. Greenberg, Oliver Sholem, was with us, and we had a fabulous time doing shows. We did a show for Israeli soldiers in what's it called, near Pardes Chana, in Pardes Chana, right? That was a great show. I have that on tape. But we would do shows in Israel a lot, once a year, twice a year. This is before I moved. So that was amazing. And then, you know, you had some songs where you watched the reaction of the kids or the adults, the kids, the first time you play the song, and they jump out of their seats and go crazy.
That
happened
really
with
special.
Ahasuerus, happened with My Menorah, it happened with a lot Yo-Yo Yarmulke. Yo-Yo Yarmulke was a biggie, you know.
When you released Yo-Yo Yarmulke, were you hoping to shift into the rapping industry? Because that wasn't really so developed before you released that in the Jewish world.
So no, the answer was I never expected to cross over into the Goyish world, into the non-Jewish world with Yo-Yo Yarmulke, but I did think that Yo-Yo Yarmulke would make an impact in the Jewish world, and it did. Same thing like all the others, make it a motzi, be good, be cool, be Jewish, you know, Wash This Way was before that. So yeah, no, it was really fun. That was, those were great experiences. Also, when we would go to places that were so far out, like Anchorage, Alaska, we did a show in Anchorage, Alaska, in March, 5 feet of snow everywhere. You know, you had those type of experiences that you can't really quantify.
Now everybody has to overcome a volcano and an avalanche to perform.
Right. That's right. A famous story where I'm flying to Alaska. We get detoured to LA and because of a volcano. And then in the volcano, in LA airport, there's a earthquake. And then when we get to Alaska, finally, there's an avalanche. So we that was a toughie. That was a toughie. But they were all great experiences. And I never expected, you know, I don't know. I never expected it to end. Now, which is kind of weird. But I never expected it to start either. I never thought this would be a living. Who thinks this was going to be a living? I mean, that was the first question everybody asked me. They asked me two questions. I went around the world. First question was, you make a living from this? And the second question was, do you have to get permission from the artist to release the song?
Uh-huh.
So those are the two questions everybody asked me.
Wow. And I guess we'll talk more about the career in general. But I think in the beginning, you mentioned the positive letters you got from the girl whose brother wasn't so religious. But at the same time, I've heard you mention that when you released the song to Abarbanel, Abarbanel, you got an anonymous letter from Cleveland saying that the Abarbanel is rolling in his grave. Did you expect the pushback from the changes you made in the world of Jewish music? And how did you deal with the haters?
Ooh. No, I didn't expect the pushback. One of the things that the first album taught me was that people are actually listening to what you say. I didn't think people were listening.
The lyrics, you mean?
Yeah. I didn't think people were listening. I didn't think it mattered what I was said. And I got this pushback. The Abarbanel, that letter was one of the examples. But I got other examples where people would say to me, what are you doing? What is this? What is this you're doing? You know? And, you know, that was hard. You know, one of the big, I'm not going to mention his name, but one of the big youth administrators called me into his office and said, Lenny, you know, you're a good guy, but this music is Novel B'Shus HaTorah. You know, it's an abomination in the name of the Torah. And I looked at him and I said, Rabbi, it's really good music. You're wrong. So 25 years later, you know, this same rabbi was in Israel, and I'm called him up. I said, I just want you to know, after all this that has happened, do you retract your statement? Do you still think that this music is Novel B'Shus HaTorah? So he answered me, you don't need my haskama. You've done a lot of great things. But had you come to me before you put out this album and said, is this the way to do outreach? I would have told you no. And I still believe it.
Interesting.
But so he doubled down. He wouldn't. I was looking for I was wrong. You're right. I was wrong. And he didn't give that to me. But he's still a good guy, and I like him. He just disagrees. You know, it's one of those we'll agree to disagree moments, you know.
Yeah.
In the meantime, he did, you know, I'm not going to tell you, but he did imitate me by putting out an album that was similar to what I do. So.
Uh-huh. Okay, wow. And Ashokak started out in January of 86, and you've always been relevant for almost four decades since. How do you evolve over time and accomplish this?
Yeah, it's hard. Irving Berlin would say, it's not about this album, right? It's about the next one. And it's about the next one. Can you recreate? Can you make people still stay interested? I don't know how we did it. It just kept going. And Hashem always provided me with investors. One specific investor who was a Reform Jew, I think he would call himself, and he lived in Grand Junction, Colorado. He drove 9 hours to hear me play in Denver. It's 5 hours. I think it must have been 5 hours. And he said to me, Lenny, he said, I am a doctor. God has given me a lot of money, but I'm a hippie, really, and I don't know why he's given me all this money, but I want to be involved in every project that you do. And that was, he invested in the next 20 albums. This was after I had made Aliyah. And I said, how am I going to put out new music? I don't have, you know, and he was there for me. Now we have to talk about, well, what happened when Napster came about and people stopped buying music, which is really where we are right now. Right now, everything is streaming. So now I have to get sponsorships in order to, you know, I made a not-for-profit organization. And
Four Corners Project.
Four Corners Project, right? In order for me to make new music, I need people to sponsor songs or sponsor part of the album, you know.
Wow, so, and I mentioned in the introduction that you have over 520 songs. Can you write a song in an hour, or could it take some time?
I could write a song in 10 minutes.
Wow.
It depends. Let me tell you what it's about. There's a pipeline up in Shamayim. It's a Tzinor Yetzirati in Hebrew. It's a creative pipeline. And everybody can access it. Non-Jews, Jews, and you get this idea, you get this inspiration, and you write, and it could take 10 minutes. It could also take 10 months. It could also take 10 hours. It depends. Depends. So, like, I'll just give you a Daniel in Babylon story, my musical that has 29 songs in it. I wrote all of those songs in a 6 to 8 week period where the songs kept coming down and coming down and coming down and coming down. And I kept writing and writing and writing. I said, Hashem, what are you doing? It was the greatest experience. Oh my God. At the end of that experience, I walked around the room crying. Like I had received musical prophecy, you know? And really, if you look into the Rambam and he talks about prophecy, prophecy is this, it's knowledge combined with this attachment to Hashem where he gives you inspirations and you convert it into songs or books or whatever. So that's in Mora Nevuchim, by the way, in chapter 37, I believe. Wow. But, you know, somebody just actually, the reason I mentioned it and the reason I know this is because somebody came up to me and gave me this to read about Nevuah. and about how, you know, creativity is a form of nevuah. It's a form of prophecy, right?
Yeah.
So how have I kept it up? I just did. It's kind of like God said, this is what you're going to do. And then I went out and I did it.
I'm curious, would you say there's something that distinguishes a fan who recognizes you from early albums like Jewish Pride and Amuna versus someone who recognizes you from the newer albums?
Yeah, I would say that most of the people that I will meet are old school fans up to 1995. Now, there are new school fans. There are. But the old school fans outnumber them greatly. Like Schlock Rock, I think, peaked in 1991 with We've Got a Strong Desire, right?
Yeah.
That was, and then you had the Bring Back the Shabbos Feeling album, and then you had Woodschlock. Those were the peak years, 91 through 95, although 88, you know, 86 to 95, those 10 years were peaking, going up and up and up and up and up. And I was selling so many, I was selling a lot of product. People would say, you can't make a living putting out an album. And they were wrong. I was making a living. I was making a parnassa selling albums and t-shirts and all that stuff, you know? So the question is, you know, at this point, at the age of 61, which who would have ever thought that I...
You're still, you know, going strong.
I still feel 20. I still feel like 20, 25, you know. But I didn't start Schlock Rock until I was 25 years old.
Wow. And I think that aside from the lyrics, one of the biggest differences between you and other Jewish singers is your concert attire. How did you get 114 hockey jerseys, and what caused you to start wearing them while you were performing?
Oh, so good. Well, the hockey jerseys I only wear at the Lenny Solomon live shows. I don't wear them at concerts. Oh, yeah. Sometimes I do.
I think I saw you perform in a hockey jersey once.
Right. In the old days, I used to. Well, I love hockey, as you could figure out. And one of the COVID, let's call it the COVID side effects, was that I found this website where you could buy hockey jerseys very cheap. And I figured to myself, well, let's try to get three from each NHL team.
Whoa, so
there are 30. There are 30 to, well, because they have a home jersey, an away jersey, and they have a alternative jersey, an alternate.
Yeah,
right?
Most people don't care about 30 teams. You know, who cares about the teams that like, never?
That's true, but I believe it or not, I'll wear the Winnipeg jersey, the Winnipeg Jets jersey. People will come and Winnipeg, yeah, or Minnesota, wow. Or St. Louis. You wouldn't believe it. So 32 times 3 is 96, right? So you got 96 jerseys right there. Then you've got some jerseys that are Heritage Series or they were the outdoor uniforms. That they
and the All-Star special. Jersey, right? I've seen the All-Star.
I have two All-Star jerseys. Yeah. So I got up to 127 now. I think that's going to be it. Wow. I think that's going to be it. Or maybe it's 119 or 120. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm only waiting. There's only one more jersey that I have to get. It's the third jersey from the Seattle Kraken.
Oh,
they haven't released an alternate jersey yet. So when they release an alternate jersey, that will be the last jersey that I have. And then the real question is, what do I do with it? Do I sell all the jerseys and think of something else to wear, you know? Or
yeah,
but it was fun. It was a fun thing.
It's a lot of jerseys, and I guess before I ask the final question, there's a recurring segment, or sometimes we'll end an interview with rapid fire questions. So I'll just ask four quick questions and then we'll start to wrap it up. But if someone were to test you today, would you know the lyrics for every song you've ever put out?
95%.
That's pretty impressive. And do you share the parodies with the original singers?
No.
No.
And I don't believe they've ever heard.
Interesting. And what's your favorite line from any song? Personally, mine is when you rhyme Brit Milah with Akedah from the Shocker's Magical History Tour in 91.
So I'm going to say Amanda Rosenstein from Called Michal, where that whole song, and also Sukkot Nights from the Broadway album, I love. And you know, Beauty and the Beast, Bavel instead of Belle. That's an unbelievable parody.
Oh, hey, people should check that out. Other than the Red Ruach record you got as a bar mitzvah present. What's your favorite piece of non-schlock rock memorabilia?
Oh, so what popped into my head right away was the Mordechai and David Someday We Will All Be Together song, which I actually re-recorded on Osher Va Osher. But I'm gonna say, I don't know. There's a lot of songs that I like from this. Jewish music in the 70s and 80s was so good. Because if it wasn't good, I wouldn't have stayed in Jewish music. I stayed in Jewish music because it was the best. It was really good. And it was so, it was an, in this, you know, like I love the Shabbos Yerushalayim album from Miami Boys Choir. I love the Judea album. Oh my God, the Judea album. Did you ever hear Judea? Unbelievable. Okay, so that they were so far ahead of its time that nobody even knows about them. But that was Gershon Voroba and Jonathan Rimberg and Michael Maiman and Michael Antelis and Shmuel Ramirez. They were all they have this great album called Judea, which it was an inspiration. And of course, how could I forget the Diaspora Yeshiva Band and the Magama Duo? God is alive and well and living in Jerusalem. The Magama Duo, their first album was unbelievable. And one of my favorite songs is David Cohen's Bar Mitzvah. And then, but Diaspora Yeshiva Band, I remember seeing them in concert at Queens College. And so that, you know, that's, I guess.
Well, those are some classic memories, I guess. And before we officially end the episode, we'll end with the final question, which is, you've literally traveled around the world and spoken to so many different people, and you already mentioned two questions that you would get everywhere, but even though you're constantly being asked questions, whether on podcasts and performances or on the live chat during your Four Corner broadcast, there's always questions people are never asked that they wish they were. So looking back at all the questions you've been asked, what's a question you've never been asked that you wished you were, and what answer would you give to it?
I'm going to tell you that the question that I love being asked is, what is the purpose of what you're doing? And I never really get asked that question. I got asked once and I gave the answer and they never put it in the paper.
Well,
so the question was, right, what is the purpose of Schlock Rock? What is the purpose of what you did? And I answered, which they never took the answer, was the whole purpose of Schlock Rock is to help bring Mashiach through music. That's what it is. That's what I'm here to do. And I still believe that we're going to do it.
Thank you for taking time to join for the episode. Everybody check out Schlock Rock's music on all platforms and check out the Four Corners Project. Is there anything else
you
want to mention?
Thank you very much.
Is there anything else you want to mention before we end?
To all the listeners out there who love Jewish music, it's so important to support the artists. The artists need to, you can't just make an album. It costs a lot of money. And I would just say, emphasize what you said, which is, if you're interested in more Schlock Rock songs and more original music songs, and, you know, because I'm working now on, I'm releasing three albums at the same time, then go to www.fourcornersproject.org and make a donation to keep us going for the year, and you know, you'll get it back in spades, because we just keep putting out fresh content every week, two new shows and new songs, and I'm in the middle of writing now, so it'll be great.
Thank you for listening to this past episode of the Jewish Schmooze podcast. To get our latest updates and contact us, you can follow us on Twitter at Jews_Schmooze. If you want to sponsor an upcoming episode, you can reach out to JewsSchmoozeMarketing@gmail.com. And if you give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening on, that'll be tremendously appreciated. Thank you so much, and hope you're looking forward to the next episode also.